A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in all of Europe, now in a conflict zone with a lack of clarity since the visit of the IAEA inspectors a week past through the combat zone, through what we were told was shelling, very conveniently blocking their way. However, they did reach the plant, led by their director general, and they did leave someone behind, we're told, to give them good information. However, I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, to comment on Zaporizhia a week past the IAEA team arriving, and what do we know and what we don't know about the plan. I begin with Reuters' report in these last hours from Vienna. A draft resolution that diplomats say Poland and Canada have prepared ahead of next week's meeting of the UN Nuclear Watchdog's Board of Governors calls on Russia to cease all actions at Ukraine's nuclear facilities. The draft being circulated among the 35 countries on the Board of Governors of the IAEA is a follow-up to a resolution that was passed by an emergency board meeting in March and that only Russia and China opposed. Henry, a very good day to you. Thank you for this. The IAEA is calling for Russia to leave the facility and for all combat actions to cease around it. It seems far-fetched at this point. Would that answer your concerns? Good evening to you, Henry.
Good evening. I don't think so. The good news about such a resolution is, following on the report, which was actually critical of what the Russians were doing, if you read it, you know, twice carefully, this is at least a follow-on action that puts their behavior in a spotlight and says, you know, you really ought to leave. So that's all good. But I think, as you pointed out in your intro, How likely is it that the Russians are going to do that? I would suspect that the only time they would leave is if they thought they had to retreat and those are not quite the circumstances quite yet. And so I don't think it's very likely. What they haven't done and what they need to do is to recluse the deputy director, who is former deputy director of Rosatom, that is now serving in the IAEA in charge of nuclear energy and safety. Now, they haven't put a spotlight on him. I think they need to at least force him to recluse himself from an awful lot of the activities that the agency finds itself now engaged in concerning the safety of Zaporizhia. They have chosen not to do that. That is something they can successfully pull off, unlike a demilitarization of Zaporizhia, which I don't think they can pull off.
Henry, I want to review what we know and what we don't know about the plant on the basis of the information a week past and also the reasoning about the reports we've had over these last months since the plant was taken by the Russian forces in March of this year. What we don't know, let's start with the report a week past that a shell hole had opened up in the building containing the fuel rods recently extracted from some of the reactors and encased, as you instructed me, in concrete. What is the risk to those casks for in a war zone?
If they're directly hit with artillery shells, it may very well be that they can't hold up and they would leak radioactivity into the atmosphere. whether they were hit directly, I doubt. But that's got to be a concern, I suppose. And they can probably withstand direct hits by, fighter bomber jets. Not that fighter bomber jets would want to do a suicide mission. So they're pretty hardy, but even those things, they could be conceivably broken open. So that's sort of, a layman's assessment, if that helps.
All right, we go to electricity. The electricity coming into the plant heretofore, before the conflict, was four power lines. We were told variously over these last weeks, two are working, one are working, none are working. We're told variously over these last weeks that there is a backup generator run by diesel fuel that is available for 72 hours or more of support. What is the risk of those power lines and that diesel generator? Can they be in some way augmented by emergency response?
Well, I think we're playing a tight game now. The power lines currently, if I understand the news reports, are not feeding electricity in to run the safety equipment and important water pumps to keep the fuel in the reactor and the spent fuel properly cool. And as I've said before, if they are not properly cooled, they can heat up and break through the cladding and produce gases and possibly produce not only a loss of coolant accident that would shut the plant down, but enough radioactivity and pressure to blow radioactivity outside of the reactor, which would cause everyone to panic and have to evacuate for many, many, many square miles. So that's the worry. I think the electricity now is perhaps available from the diesel generators. The fuel they have at most, I'm told, is worth 10 days, so they have to keep topping that off. It may be considerably less, we don't know. The way it's being operated, according to the news reports, is one of the reactors is supplying electricity to keep everything cool and calm at the other reactors. There are a total of six. That is cutting it very, very thin. And that is not a very stable or very reliable way to supply electricity.
That's what you call an island. Is that correct, Henry?
It's called island mode. And I think that's the reason why the nuclear regulatory officials in Ukraine and now, I suspect, President Zelensky are talking about possibly having to shut it down. There's pluses and minuses to doing that. I think they're agonizing over this and with cause.
Well, let's go to the report. This is 2 days hence. Ukraine said it might have to shut down the Russian-occupied nuclear plant to avoid a disaster and called on residents in areas near the embattled facility to evacuate for their own safety. What they're asking for is a possibility of shutting it down. Pluses and minuses. How long would the shutdown take, presuming that everything was in line for the little we know about power, about the other plants? Could they do it in a week, a day?
Well, there's a lot of unknowns. When we say shutdown, there are various versions or types when you say that word. The actual shutdown of the reaction of neutrons fissioning happens very, very quickly, in a matter of, moments, no more than an hour. I mean, it's much less than that, actually. That happens almost instantaneously when they lower rods that absorb the neutrons. The problem is that there still is radioactivity that goes on because there are radioactive byproducts and it produces heat that takes longer to dissipate. And the amount of time it takes to dissipate depends on how old the fuel is or how long it's been fissioning. And it can be weeks, days to weeks, for that heat to come down to a level that's below boiling. And once it gets below boiling, around 200 Fahrenheit, then you don't need cooling. Regular convection, if you will, or just the circulation, it will self-cool. But up until then, you still need to keep water flowing, although the amount of pumping and the amount of electricity to run those pumps is much less.
The politics of this, I've read in various places, involve this, that if their shutdown is achieved, at that point, they lose the electricity needed to keep the Dnieper River Valley alight in a conflict zone. It also means, I've read, that Kyiv is concerned that the Russians would restart and therefore take possession of the plant as a war treasure, war booty, and send electricity only to their side of the Dnieper River Valley. These are all political considerations, and that they all have merit, but it doesn't deal with safety. What I'm reading, Henry, is that what we have a debate on in Vienna, but also in Moscow, and also in Kyiv, and also in Brussels, is the politics of this is outweighing the nuclear safety of this. Hence, the plant remains non-transparent and dangerous to everyone there and in the valley. Is all that correct, Henry?
When you read the report that the IAEA wrote, it makes very clear that the Russians are compounding the uncertainties created by war by mismanaging the plant to maintain fear, loathing, and uncertainty. In specific, they don't allow the people most knowledgeable about how to run the plant to be at all in touch properly with the regulators in Kyiv. Not only that, they don't allow them access to supposedly an emergency command room, which the Russians are running. None of this enhances safety. None of this is required because of the state of war. It's because the Russians consciously want to introduce uncertainties and have control in a way that has safety, not even third, but fifth or sixth. So that's a bad look. Yeah, I think in short, we've got to be concerned that everything that you laid out is quite possible, and the people in Kyiv have to worry that they're going to lose not only control of the plant, but the safe operation of it as well.
Henry Sikorsky is the Non-Proliferation Policy Education Center, and he's guided me to understand that nuclear energy is part of the matrix of Europe's energy needs right now. So when we come back, what are the needs? How long can Europe put together an alternative to Russian gas that has now ceased in Nord Stream 1? And is nuclear part of that future, whether in the next 3 years or the next 30 years? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. It's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.